Mayor Kastner, I want to ask you the same question about work through the council that you have sponsored, or as mayor, that you have sponsored and put
right.
into play.
Well, I try not to sponsor too much. Sometimes after everybody discovered the power of my yes vote sitting on the table, I ended up sponsoring a number of things for the administration. So when they wanted to have, you know, additional people added to the fire department, I sponsored that. And I worked pretty closely with the administration on working up the two-year budget. And that was a big sea change, really, for the city. And but coupled with that, I mean, I spent a lot of time on that. And coupled with that, it was a reporting requirement that was supposed to kind of standardize the quarterly reporting to the council so that the council was always looking at the same information quarter after quarter after quarter with a seven-month look back and a seven-month look ahead so that these two-year budgets could kind of roll along. And that has never been fulfilled. I certainly got up to my neck in the settlement with NSTAR. That was something that took a half a year to get through, but you know, at the beginning of that, I said it's going to end up in a settlement. That's the only way to go.
Can you talk briefly about what that is, about the settlement with NSTAR?
Well,
I know briefly
okay,
is going to be tough,
yeah.
Right.
And honestly, you know, a lot of these things I have are what I would call a bedtime story, guaranteed to put you to sleep because they're so in the weeds and everything like that. But it, simply put, when the RCA approved the NSTAR tariff and the addition to the trunk line, it was a very faulty analysis, and we were going to be, all the ratepayers were going to be on the hook forever. And when that was discovered, we had to find a way to fix it. And as soon as we discovered it, NSTAR went in and made a new filing in order to kind of sweep the money quickly back. And so there was a process. We were an intervener. We reached settlement with NSTAR, and then we had to convince the RCA and the State Attorney General.
Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
And the State
That's all right. That's my role here.
Right. And the State Attorney General, all of a sudden, the two parties were in agreement, and then we had to convince the other people that it was a fair deal. But it all ended up, but it took, honestly, it took a half a year, and I had hundreds and hundreds of hours involved in that. So, and then COVID, you know, what kind of leadership can you display as a mayor, you know, walking that thin line of, you know, we need to do things, you know, very specifically for a public health purpose, but with recognizing that we have businesses to support and mental health issues to support. And, you know, so I came out early in March making my three-headed monster speech. So anyway, I those are really kind of the high points. There were many things that I tried to do.
So I have a question here for Donna, and I'm absolutely going to ask Mayor Kastner to weigh in on it if he likes as well. The question says, despite the effort to get it passed by the community, you were one of those who voted to reverse the plastic bag ban earlier this year. It's I figured it's time for this question. We're talking about things that changed during COVID because it was right at the time. It says Venuti and Evenson gave strong testimony against it, but that you voted to reverse the ban. Can you confirm that? I did not confirm that.
That is true. Yes.
And so why?
You know,
you are. Although I was going to say you're a wildlife biologist, but I think wildlife biologist may be the most common occupation of people who have ever served on the council. Like Rachel, right? And then many before her. Anyway, why did you vote to reverse the plastic bag ban?
Well, first of all, I will say that I am strongly in favor of a plastic bag ban. Plastics in our environment is among the things that we really need to address as a society. We made two decisions relative to the bag ban. One was to say, okay, the bag ban is not in place, you know, well, an emergency order basically. So, you know, for 6 months, basically for this summer, businesses can don't need to use plastic bag or can use their plastic bags. And then there was another one that was really specific to the seasonal businesses. And there were a couple things. For the first one, which was the businesses more in town, it was that these businesses had been working towards, you know, an alternative to plastic bags, but they hadn't found it yet. And when COVID hit, there were a lot of concerns in the community about the safety of using bags, the safety of reusable bags, touching other people's bags and things like that. And so to me, as a short-term measure to, you know, for the mental and physical health of the community, that felt like a small thing to do as a temporary measure, and hoping that in the interim, these businesses are continuing to find an alternative to plastic bags, that when the ban goes away, or when the ban comes back, everything will be in place and it's seamless. That's my hope. The other piece of it was the seasonal businesses on the spit didn't have time to use all the bags that they had in stock. And they didn't know, you know, what the timing of the ban was going to be and that sort of thing. And so they had a lot of stock left. And they were also coming into getting ready to start a season under COVID when they had no idea what their season was going to even look like. And so asking these businesses to have an added expense of getting new bags, different bags, just felt like too much in this particular season. So that was the reason for my votes. I am hoping that we will very soon stop seeing plastic bags again.
Mayor Kastner, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, only to add just a little bit of science to it. On the continuum of fear and fearlessness, when the virus first showed up, everybody thought that these fomites, which is an infected surface, you know, I've just infected your countertop here, I just infected your microphone. They thought that that was going to be the primary transmitter
source.
Right,
we heard about plastic holding the virus.
Exactly, exactly. And so the businesses were really fearful about having fomite-laden surfaces brought in. And so there was a lot of people wearing gloves. There were a lot of people, you know, not touching cans without gloves on and things like that. But they quickly found out, actually by the end of March, that they couldn't find any single source events involving fomites. That it was all respiratory droplets. That's the name of the game of contagion. So that partially drove the decision, because the businesses really did not want to have things that they thought might be in infection carriers coming into their stores.
Okay. Now, I do want to ask, I'll go back to Mayor Kastner. You have done, you've talked a lot about your work with the Chamber of Commerce over the last few months because of the vast economic issues, the many economic issues that we're dealing with right now because of the pandemic. How can the mayor or council, how can you as mayor support economic recovery other than just facilitating CARES Act funding? What does that look like?
No, it's more than just facilitating the funding. And I mean, that was honestly, that drove me hard in end of May and into June, getting ready to get the Esberg proposal out there.
It's not important.
No, of course it is. It's a big deal. But, you know, basically, when we went into an emergency declaration, it removed the council and it removed the mayor from government in almost a sweep of the hand. We went into a unified command and a lot of the decision making, and they were completely focused on the pandemic. And I was completely focused on how are we going to have economic survival if we gauge everything against the health benefits. So I worked really hard behind the scenes with businesses and coming up before the governor came out with his mandates, coming up with business plans on how to isolate those businesses, how to keep them open. And when the mandates came out, where the boundaries were and who could stay open and who could do that. And I worked hand in hand with the chamber, who disseminated the information immediately, and with Tim Dillon at CAPED. And they were absolutely heroic. But somebody had to do that, but it was not the purview of the Unified Command. And I took it upon myself to carve out some sort of side channel to help keep businesses aware of what the programs were. But man, the failings that came along were really, really frustrating. The PPP thing, you know, Wells Fargo told me it was going to be one way with them, and then it never gelled.
You mean about being able to get PPP?
Immediately, yeah. Mm-hmm. My brother in Massachusetts had it in 10 days, and you know, I think it took over a month to get any PPP money into Alaska. So.
And since it's my role to pull apart acronyms, that's the Paycheck Protection
Program.
Yes. Councilmember Adderhold, do you want to talk about what the mayor's role could be in supporting economic recovery? I know that question was really, it was written for and to Mayor Kastner, but I want to make sure that if you like, you have a chance to weigh in on how the mayor can support economic recovery.
Well, what, you know, I think it is, a lot of it is through what we're doing with the, you know, trying to get the CARES Act funds out to the community. And you know, we've asked a number of things with a letter that we just sent to the congressional delegation, asking that, you know, we need to extend the timing to be able to use these funds, and you know, for the city to be able to backfill some revenues. But I think that the mayor has done a great job on that particular aspect of working with businesses. I mean, we don't have anything if we don't have our small businesses in this community. So we do need to support them.
I do want to go back to Mayor Kastner for a moment. Has there been any response from Senator Sullivan and all the people you sent the letter to, asking for an extension on the amount of time that we have to spend the money? Also, what was the other ask in
there? There were a couple, but we got our answer this morning.
Oh.
The Senate has now proposed a $500 billion solution. $350 billion of it already are in the existing CARES Act, so they're adding another $150 billion, and they're not giving any money to cities or towns, municipalities or states, and they're not going to give another stimulus check. And basically, it's a very short list of what they're trying to do with the money. So, no, I go in and check my mail regularly, and I haven't seen anything back from the congressional delegation. And I thought that and by the way, I just want to say this, Don and I worked together on putting that letter. And so, you know, I don't want anybody to think that you know, that we can't work together. We have on several occasions.
Okay. Now, every time, you mentioned the Unified Command a couple minutes ago, I talk to representatives from the Unified Command usually twice a week, but always once a week. And we take questions on Thursday, and every single week for months, the question comes up. So I'm going to ask you guys too. If you could explain for people why the city of Homer has not required masks. People ask it every time. And also, when I do want to ask you, we had a conversation, Mayor Kastner, a little bit before all of this, about how home rule, becoming a home rule city, might have empowered us to mandate masks, but what would have been required to do that would have been something else entirely. But I want to get to this. So, Mayor Kastner, why can't the city mandate masks?
Because we don't have the authority to do it. I mean, that's the simple answer. And we have, you know, we got a very extensive legal opinion from our attorney. You know, we're a Title 29 city, first class city, and the person holding the authority on health for us is the governor.
I can say that again. I got it written down.
So that's the short answer. But I want to say one thing.
Yeah,
I'm very proud
problems.
Of this town,
yeah.
and I'm, You know, our last reported case was of a positive result was on August 20th. So we are now 19 days.
Well, Homer, that was South Peninsula Hospital did not identify the latest case, but there has been one Homer case identified.
But South Peninsula Hospital, the last case was August 20th. And so for South Peninsula Hospital, we've now gone 19 days without a local case, which makes me feel, I mean, there are many, many more people wearing masks. Now, I think that people are starting to understand the ramifications of droplet prevention.
So I have Patricia on line one, so you guys are going to have to put on your headsets in order to hear this. Stand by. Patricia, are you there? Hello? Hello, hello? Nah, it's just not happening. So Patricia, if you are listening, if you could call back and give your question to Matt, and he will bring it into the studio, because that's two tries now and just not able to take. I'm very sorry about the technical difficulties we're having. But I have more questions. So why is it so? I guess there isn't a way to direct this to a council member unless, I mean, one of the things that the city attorney said at two meetings ago, maybe last meeting, was that the only path that he saw to mandating masks was to have the council give themselves those powers by ordinance. But is that something that you feel like could or should happen, Councilmember Adderhold?
There would be a lot that went into it. To give ourselves health powers, and I don't think that our attorney was actually recommending that we go that route.
No,
I think he was discouraging that.
Yeah,
but it would be. I mean, we'd have to add staff. I can't remember all the exact processes, but we'd have to have people in health positions.
We'd have to create a health department.
Yes, and I don't know that we want to go that route or that our budget could withstand that. I mean, we have arguments over hiring one new person, you know, to add to staff. And so, it'd be a huge step.
I want to, I have a question into info@kbbi.org. Dan asks, would either candidate support a change to the senior property tax exemption and make it needs-based? Property tax?
It's a black hole for the city, and
what do you mean by that?
It's something that just is growing larger and larger and larger due to the demographics of our city, and I had proposed many years ago that we try and curtail it or sunset it or something or bring the amount down. But
is it possible to make it needs-based?
I don't know how. Oh, anything is possible.
Sure.
But basically, we're following state law on this, and I'm not sure that the state law would allow it to be needs-based. But the amount that you can
the cap.
Yeah, the cap could be lowered and continue to be lowered over time.
And Councilmember Adderhold, I want to ask the same question to you. Would you support a change to the senior property tax exemption and make it needs-based?
Yes, I would. I agree with what Mayor Kastner said. This is state statute, and a few years ago, the council did send a request to state legislative representatives asking them to look into it, and it didn't go anywhere. And you know, the borough also we're at 150,000, which is the lowest we can go by state statute. The borough is at, I think, 300,000, and they tried to lower it, and grandfathering in anybody who currently has it, but lower it down to the, over time, stepping it down to 150,000, and that went to the voters and it failed. So It's not something that has a lot of popularity, but it does have a huge impact on revenues to municipalities at a time when the state it's you know an unfunded mandate, so to speak, because the state is providing less and less revenues to municipalities over time, and who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Adderhold. We're about 10 minutes out from the end of this hour, so thank you both in advance. But I wanted to make sure to reserve a little time to ask you both, what are the issues, or is there anything that you came here to talk about that no one has asked you about? I mean, Mayor Kastner, is there anything you want to let people know about, or plans that you have, or something that perhaps you came here for?
Well, my candidate statement in 200 words was fairly succinct, what I think were the high points of the 2 years and what I hope to do in the future. And Councilmember Adderhold's point about working with a new city manager is a key. That's a new day, you know, a new way of tracking forward. And there's been other changes that have been made in city staff, which also have the changes are apparent already with those changes. And I'm afraid that COVID is going to dominate a lot of the decision making here in the next near term anyway, you know, probably well into the spring. And that there'll just be an awful lot of time spent with that in trying to take care of this CARES Act money prior to the deadline, which is currently and yet to be extended on December 31st. So we have to spend all the CARES Act money by then. And then the last thing is that, you know, it's been driving me crazy on how we account for what money we have and how it gets spent and how it's allocated. And you know, our last financial report is from December 31st, 2018. We haven't seen anything from 2019 yet, and it's not even really an audit. And so I really, there's a lot of work yet to be done on the financial side of the city's reporting. We need constant accounting, not just occasional accounting.
Thank you, Mayor Kastner. Councilmember Adderhold, were there points that you came here to make today or with the intention of making that we haven't touched on?
No, I think that this has been some really interesting, well-rounded questions. It's been interesting to hear what the voters, what our constituents are have to say. So I appreciate the questions.
Well, I've got another one. Patricia asks, I'll start with you this time, Councilmember Adderhold. How do you balance the need for city services with the push for growth? For example, do we add parking on the spit? But that's not the only example, of course.
Yeah, it's, that is the push and pull, the services that we provide are based on our, you know, the revenues that we receive, which are mostly from sales taxes and property taxes, and, you know, how the city residents really see the need to have those revenues spent. So, you know, if we want to add something, we have to, you know, if we're going to rearrange parking on the spit, we have to figure out how that's being paid for, which, you know, there's also a push-pull between the Port and Harbor, which their funds are an enterprise fund, and the general fund, which pays for most of the rest of city services. And so there's always the push-pull of, is that from general funds or is that from Port and Harbor funds? So there's, I'm not sure if I'm exactly answering the question, but there's always that push-pull of, you know, how does the council spend the city's money in a responsible and appropriate way?
Well, when we talk about that balance between, or that the issue of city services and the push for growth, harbor expansion comes to mind.
Yeah.
But Mayor Kastner, I want to just direct the whole question to you as well. How do you balance the need for city services with the push for growth? For example, do we add parking on the spit?
Okay, well, let's go back to annexation. That was a big push for growth of city boundaries. And with it came the implied promise that, okay, we're going to include you in the city, but we're going to include you with what the other city residents have. We have not fulfilled that promise. So some people would perceive that as a growth sort of a thing by expanding water and sewer and such around the city. But that's like an unfulfilled promise that has been made, and not a lot of effort has gone into that. So I think that we have to give everybody kind of equal access to the services that we have downtown.
Okay, well, there's one more question that I'm going to send back to you. It also needs some clarifying. And thank you to everyone who sent questions today, because even when we have to pull them apart and figure out, you know, how to answer them in pieces, there's been really good discussion today, so thank you. This question comes from Jen. She wants to know about the Ketchikan City Set Free Water Service deal, agreement. She says, I learned that the policy had been in place for 10 years and there was no debate to be had. Will you clarify the situation? I don't know what that means. Do you know what that means?
I do, but it's not set free. It has nothing to do with set free. Set free is way out East Road. It has to do with the low-income housing that's been built in, it's under construction right now, the low-income housing that was built in Ketchikan City. And then, you know, those lots along Ketchikan Drive had been stubbed out, and there was an allocation made for the water extension to service those lots. That was the vote I broke because I sponsored it.
Right, that was a tie that you broke.
That was a tie that I broke, yeah. And I sponsored it. So, but that's, what can I say? The water was there. There were 23 units to be put up. That in my last election, low-income housing was something that was a point of discussion during the campaign, and I felt like it was a project that needed to happen.
Well, thank you both.
Donna might have something to say about it.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask Donna, would you like to comment on that vote and on that situation?
Sure. I was one of the no votes on that, and it's not because I don't think we need low-income housing, because we need it very much. I wish that we had low-income housing in town. My concern was that by our code, we don't send water outside the city other than we don't pipe water outside the city. We send bulk water outside the city. And this changed a precedent. It made an exception. And when you make that one exception, you're setting yourself up for making other exceptions. And so that was my concern about that. And I understand that the grant that organization received, you know, it could not be in city limits, which is interesting to me, because low-income housing is best when it's close to where people have jobs and things like that. So that's another
walkable
thing.
Bikeable,
right,
mass
exactly.
Well, we don't have public transportation,
but, yeah,
but you know,
for people who maybe not be able to own a car or afford fuel, that they would still be able to get to jobs and that sort of thing. So that's my perspective. I don't like making exceptions. When you're making public policy, you should be making public policy that is for the general good of all.
So I want to try and get in another question. Larry asks, it appears that continued COVID restrictions will preclude normal full use of city facilities by the public for the foreseeable future. Is it time to start considering reducing city staff? Mayor Kastner?
Well, no, because in something completely separate, I've just insured for a full year of an arts activity against success because I don't know when the vaccine is going to show up, if a vaccine is going to show up, and everything like that. But the functions of the city are still carrying on, and you know I haven't really seen anything that's been lacking other than access. I'm really kind of a believer in these counts that we have going now, and if we continue on keeping the town COVID-free, then I think that we can start to loosen up. It's like picking berries when there's bears in the patch. You don't do it when there's bears, but when there's no bears, then you can be a little bit freer about it.
And Councilmember Adderhold, do you want to, do you have any comments on, is it time to reduce city staff?
I would agree with Mayor Kastner.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and ask this final question. We're going to get it under. Councilmember Adderhold from Catherine, advocates for private enterprise parking in town to service visitors and accommodate tourism on the spit. Does that make sense to you?
Basically to have paid parking in the city, I think is what it is.
What do you think about that?
I haven't thought in detail on that, but certainly, you know, there are, you know, all options about how we're going to resolve parking in town and on the spit should be on the table, and that's, you know, that's why we're doing the parking study. What are the options? If it's off premises parking, if it's off the spit, how do we get people on the spit and that sort of thing?
Mayor Kastner?
The place where they really need a private parking garage is up near the hospital. They've got so many open spaces, and they've run out of room for expansion of hospital services. So, not my policy decision, but a good suggestion.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Ken Kastner and Councilmember Donna Adderhold, candidates for the mayoral election, Mayor of Homer, in the October 6th municipal election. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions today. This has been The Coffee Table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson.